Information, please. Presented each week at this time by Canada Dry, famous the world over for its fine beverages. Wake up, America. Time to stump the experts and enjoy a cool, refreshing glass of ginger ale. Every week at this time, Canada Dry presents Information, Please. All you have to do is send us stumpers. We provide a quartet of experts who would rather answer questions than do practically anything else. You may submit from 1 to 3 original questions with the correct answers. For every question our quartet fails to answer, the sender gets $10 with the compliments of Canada Dry. For every question we use, whether or not it's answered correctly, the sender gets $5. So you can make $15 if our experts miss out, which they occasionally do. Our editorial staff may reword your question a trifle. Don't worry about it. Whenever there is a duplication of questions, Information Please uses the one that was submitted first. All questions become the property of Information Please and should be addressed to Canada Dry, 1 Pershing Square, New York City. And now may I present our master of ceremonies, Mr. Clifton Fadiman, literary critic of the New Yorker magazine. Mr. Fadiman.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, as you know, Information Please is an unrehearsed and ad-lib program. It would be easy enough to work it the other way, but frankly, we don't think it would be half as much fun. Not a quarter as much fun. Now, opposite me this evening are seated 4 highly intellectual ad-libbers. Franklin P. Adams, conductor of the Conning Tower. Oscar Levant, composer, pianist, and musical director of the American Way. John Kieran, sports authority whose memory runs the gamut from art to zoology. And as our guest of honor, the noted news commentator, author, and correspondent, Raymond Graham Swing. Now, remember, for each question that's missed, Canada Dry rings up $10, and that's paid out to the sender, plus $5 for the use of the question. We're off. The first question, coming from Mrs. D. McFadden of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, is slightly sadistic, gentlemen. She wants you to name 4 popular songs, either current or past, the titles of which suggest physical distress. For example, My Heart Stood Still might be one. Now, let's have 4 more. Mr. Kieran. I beg pardon, Mr. Levant.
Black Eyes.
Black Eyes. Very good.
You want Black me to sing Eyes.
It? That's one. It? No, I don't want you to sing it, Mr. Levant, if I can possibly help it. Mr. Adams.
The Fatal Wedding.
You gentlemen are commenting on life in general with these titles this evening. The Fatal Wedding, do you think that necessarily suggests physical distress?
Oh, it did.
Mr. Swing.
The Ishgrala Nisht. I'll not complain, although my heart should break.
Oh, that's a very nice one. That is perhaps not what one might call a popular song.
Oh, very popular.
Popular with, yes, in some quarters. That would be 3. All right, 1 more. Mr. Levant.
I get a kick out of you.
Oh. I don't know how you do these things, gentlemen. Mr. Adams, do you remember one called Don't Swat Your Mother, Boys, Just Cause She's Old?
By Brian Hooker.
Really? The one who translated Cyrano de Bergerac?
That's yeah. The boy.
Used to make a living writing songs like that?
He wrote with Rudolf Rimmel, many things. Very, very successful.
Getting to be quite a lot of cozy reminiscence this evening, gentlemen. Very good. Suppose we go on to the next question from D. Sawyer of Brooklyn, New York. And this brings us to the current crisis. I'm going to ask you to tell me what the significance of the following times are in connection with the current crisis. 11 a.m. 11 a.m. Mr. Levant.
Wasn't that Sunday morning, the deadline as far as England time was concerned?
That would be correct, yes. 11 a.m. on September 3rd. Mark the declaration of war by England.
That was as far as England, that's all.
Yes, just England.
The declaration.
I beg pardon.
The expiry of the ultimatum and the declaration was not made until 11:15 by air.
Oh, I didn't know that. Then there is a difference of a quarter of an hour.
Why don't you apologize?
I beg your pardon. Midnight. Midnight, Mr. Swain.
The Germans waited for a Polish representative to appear in Germany by midnight last Thursday.
Yes, that's quite right. 5 p.m. Let's swing again.
Expiry of the French ultimatum.
Yes. And finally, 10 years. Mr. Swing?
Well, no.
I beg spot, Mr. Levant.
No, Mr. Swing. Have
you see to Mr. Swing, Mr.
Yeah,
Swing?
I know it, but I'm
Mr. Adams. Swing. Very well.
That's how long a lot of people say the war is going to last.
No, Chancellor Hitler said that.
I think he said he could last 10 years.
I think he said he would fight it through if it would last 10 years. There is another... there was something else, though, in connection with the phrase 10 years. It's the length of time that the Russo-German pact was to last. It's to be extended 5 years unless it's denounced before the 10-year period is up. Would that be right, Mr. Swing?
That's right.
Well, gentlemen, you have 4 out of 4 on that. I see that you either are Mr. Swing or have been listening to Mr. Swing during the last 2 days. The next question from Harold F. Childs of this city. Oh, this is addressed to all you nature lovers. Perk up, Mr. Kieran. I'm going to ask you to answer these questions about the following birds. Now, all of the questions are taken from well-known poems, and you'll have to answer in well-known poetry. Where was the raven? Where was the raven? Mr. Kieran, our bird expert.
Perched above my chamber door.
Yes.
Pallid bust of Pallas, I think, something like
That's
that.
That's right. You're quoting from what poem?
The Raven by Edgar Allan Poe, who used to live in the Bronx.
Local pride, getting... the next, where did Shakespeare's lark sing? Shakespeare's lark. Apparently a special lark belonged to Shakespeare. Mr. Adams.
At Heaven's Gate.
Yes. You want to give us the 2 lines in which the phrase appears?
And Phoebus gins arise.
Yes. Hawk, hawk, the lark at Heaven's Gate sings, and Phoebus gins arise. I bet a hat, Mr. Adams, you don't know the play from which that is taken.
Well, I know who said it to music.
Who did, Mr. Levant?
Schubert.
Schubert is quite right.
I can sing it right now.
No. The mania for singing things this evening. Mr. Adams, it's from Cymbeline. I guess nobody reads Cymbeline these days.
Not me.
Where was the tomtit singing? Where was the tomtit singing, Miss Kieran?
In a willow.
On a willow? Is that right, Mr. Adams?
On a tree by a river.
Yes, that's more definite. On a tree by a river.
That's right. He sang tit willow.
Mr. Kieran, it's a brave man that dares to answer a question before Mr. Adams, and it's derived from Gilbert and Sullivan. And you are that brave man, Mr. Kieran?
You are.
Where was the dinky bird singing? Where was the dinky bird singing? Dinky bird? Dinky bird? Maybe this is the one bird Mr. Kieran doesn't know. Mr. Kieran.
I think it's on the Umphalala tree.
That's right. You know the quotation?
It's from Eugene Field,
yes.
Isn't it?
It's, I think the poem is
Sugar
called
Plum
dinky
Tree
bird.
Or something like that.
Where the dinky bird is singing in the Umphalala tree. Nonsense verse. 4 out of 4 on birds. They're pretty good on birds, current events. The next question from Miss Anna Lee. Well, from your home borough, Miss Kieran, from the Bronx. Miss Anna Lee of the Bronx.
Anna Lee.
This is a question that's directed at you, Mr. Levant. The pianist is going to play orchestral sections of some famous piano concertos, 3 of them, and Mr. Levant is asked to show that he recognizes them by playing the solo parts that follow the orchestral section. Oh, well, we have plenty of time. Let's have the first of them. The studio pianist will play the first. He's good, isn't he, Mr. Levant? This tough one for you, Mr. Levant?
Yeah, do the first bar, not where you started, but the whole concerto. Just the first bar. No, the concerto.
This is a thrilling moment for me, ladies and gentlemen. We may possibly stump Mr. Levant. Thank you, Mr. Levant. Now, let's have the second orchestral section of another piano concerto with Mr. Levant following it with the solo part, if possible. Greek concerto in A minor, yes. Now the third and last. Mm-hmm. Not enough.
It's, I think, an A minor. Is it an A minor?
Yep.
I don't know that. Why?
Opus number 11. The Chopin Concerto in E minor. I'd like to say, however, Mr. Levant, that you're only required to get 2 out of 3, so you've saved $10 for Canada Dry. Do you feel all right now? I should like to announce, by the way, to those who are listening, that 3 young ladies have been so impressed by Mr. Levant's ability to do this sort of thing, they have formed an association for the better appreciation of Mr. Levant. And if you, any of you want to belong to this association, don't bother me. The next question from E.B. Blackburn of Weyburn, Massachusetts. What famous men of fact or fiction signed themselves as follows? 1, your lovesick Pickwick. Is this a trick question? What character in literature signed himself your lovesick Pickwick?
Pickwick.
That's what you'd think, Mr. Levant. Did you fall into that trap just to be good-natured?
No, I didn't raise my hand. I'm thinking out loud.
Oh, I beg your pardon. Any of you know? It's a tough one. Well, it wasn't Pickwick.
The man that got him in the lawsuit.
No, it was Sam Weller. Sam Weller, his manservant, you remember, who was writing a love letter to the maidservant Mary. And I think he felt somehow this was too formal and grand a letter to be signed with his own name. So he signed it with his master's name. Because it rhymed, your lovesick Pickwick. One wrong. Supposed to get 3 out of 3 on this. What famous man of fiction in this case, or literature, signed himself thus? Thine evermore, most dear lady, whilst this machine is to him. Which I admit is very bad from the point of view of syntax. Mr. Kieran.
I think it was Malvolio.
No, sorry. No? It is a character in Shakespeare, but it wasn't Malvolio.
Oh, wait a minute. Romeo.
No, take another.
I think I've taken enough.
Well, you've given us 2 very good
Don't
characters.
Don't do it again. You'll confuse me. It was confusing the first time.
Oh, well, no, I think I have it.
Mr. Kieran, coming up
to
bat.
It was Hamlet to Ophelia.
Hamlet to Ophelia is correct. Yes.
She didn't understand him either.
That's right. It was a letter which was intended, I suppose, to make people believe that he was mad, which is the reason why the phrase doesn't make much sense. Thine evermore, most dear lady, whilst this machine is to him. And Mr. Kieran, you don't mind if I count you wrong on that?
No, indeed. I was doubly wrong.
Now, the next and last, I'd like to read in full. With best wishes for your success and all of your good endeavors, that you and all who are concerned may be as I am, this leaves me well, healthy, joyful, peaceful, lively, loving, successful, prosperous, and happy in spirit, body, and mind, and in every organ, muscle, sinew, joint, limb, vein, and bone, and even in every atom, fiber, and cell of my bodily form. Mr. Kieran.
Father Divine.
Father Divine. Peace is wonderful. Very good. Now, our Minister of Finance reports that Canada Dry's disbursement total is now $10. We'll give Canada Dry a moment of its own, shall we, with Mr. Milton Cross.
Thank you, Mr. Fadiman. One of the greatest tragedies in all literature is described in the nursery rhyme about Old Mother Hubbard. Poor woman, she went to the cupboard, and as you all know, when she got there, the cupboard was bare. Now, even though Mrs. Hubbard deserves our sympathy, it seems to me that she was a rather careless woman. She wouldn't have been caught in that predicament if she had stocked up ahead of time. And now I believe all you mothers who are listening have guessed what I'm driving at. Your guess is correct. I urge you to keep your kitchen cupboard well stocked with Canada Dry, so that when your children ask for ginger ale, they won't be disappointed. For Canada Dry is the ginger ale you may give your young ones as often as they ask for it, because its purity is unquestioned. The choicest Jamaica ginger, the finest sugar, the purest water. These are the principal ingredients which have made Canada Dry a favorite refreshment among children and grown-ups all over the world. So tomorrow, when making out your shopping list, don't be a Mother Hubbard. Remember to stock your cupboard with a goodly amount of Canada Dry, the champagne of ginger ale.
Of course, your interesting essay, inspired by Mother Goose, was delivered in exactly 66.5 seconds. We'll go on with the second half of the program with a question coming to us from Athens, Tennessee, and thought up by Miss Lois Fenn. Very interesting question. It has to do with what we might call the forgotten men of literature. You know, in many cases, certain literary characters are forgotten by us entirely because their wives in the same book outshone them or overshadowed them in some way. Who, for example, gentlemen, was Rawdon Crawley? Rawdon Crawley, Mr. Levant. Mr. Sure. Kieran, I beg pardon.
He was the husband of a villainous husband of Becky Sharp, and she was no angel either.
Running and, people down.
Yeah.
Husband of Becky Sharp in
Zachary.
Buckley. Zachary Sanity Fair. Apparently, that forgotten man is not forgotten by you, Mr. Karen. See what you can do with Roger Chillingworth. Roger Chillingworth. Roger Chillingworth.
To whom was he married?
Ah, that would be giving it away, Mr. Levant. Roger Chillingworth. Sorry. Mr. Karen, did you have a... Were you going to guess at it? Have a guessing look.
Isn't that a New England story?
Yeah.
Lydia Chillingworth.
I beg pardon?
Lydia Chillingworth.
No.
There is such a book.
It's quite possible, Miss Adam. Now, you just think about that book for a while and see whether we can get the answer out of Mr. Karen.
Isn't that one of Hawthorne's?
You're prying the answer out of me.
Well, is that Karen. Right?
You tell me now.
Well, tell me.
Is that
the man in the scarlet letter?
Mm-hmm.
All right, I win.
Took you a long time, but it's quite correct. He was the husband of whom?
Hester Prynne.
That's right, Hester Prynne. Very good, gentlemen. Now, the next forgotten man of literature, I bet you don't get this one. Frank Kennedy. An easy name to forget. Frank Kennedy.
Well, that's not a French book, that I know.
No. So we're well on the road now, Mr. Levant. It's not a French book. Mr. Adams.
It wasn't Main Street, was it?
No. That fact is practically in the bag now, gentlemen. It's not a French book,
Babbitt?
And it wasn't Main Street. It leaves very little.
Babbitt?
No.
Why did you let me say it four times?
I'd like to hear you talk, Mr. Levant. The answer is Frank Kennedy was the second husband of Scarlett O'Hara in Gone with the Wind. Remember, boys, Gone with the Wind? I can't even remember the first husband. The third and last, Yancey Cravat. Mr. Levant.
That was an Oklahoma story by Edna Ferber Cimarron.
You got it. And the Yancey Cravat was the husband of whom?
Never read it or saw the picture.
Just
I read so many
it?
Reviews, I never forgot.
Now, how do you get this?
I read scenarios at RKO. They made the picture.
What a busy life you lead, Mr. Levant.
They fired me. It didn't take long.
Cimarron is correct. And Mr. Adams, Yancey Cravat was the husband of what famous heroine? Do you remember the name?
I don't remember the name.
Irene Dunne. Richard Dix, please.
Sorry. Sobrina Cravat. We got, let's see, 3 out of 4. And we were supposed to get 3 out of 4. Very good. See if I can stick you on this, coming from Mr. Porter of this city. Why are the following places of great military or naval importance in the present war? First, the Vistula River. The Vistula River. Mr. Swain.
The Vistula River is the only large commerce-bearing river in Poland, and it empties into the Baltic at Danzig.
Well, why should it be so important in the war itself, Mr. Swain?
It also is considered to be the place where the Poles will make their most important stand against the Germans.
That's quite right. The Kiel Canal. Mr. Swain again.
It's the link between the Baltic and the North Sea. The only way the German Navy, if it's bottled up in the Baltic, can get out to larger waters.
Yet go westward to reach France or England, or eastward, of course, to attack Poland. Yes. The Burgundy Gate, what is its strategic importance? The Burgundy Gate. Mr. Levant?
I don't know its strategic importance. I know that it's on the western front, near the Siegfried Line.
Yes?
That's where the French are supposed to not be making an attack, but making contact. With Germany, that's a new thing. I don't understand.
Well, they're making contact, I think, at several points, according to the dispatches.
Like dancing back to back.
The Burgundy Gate is expected to be the scene of a great French drive. I don't know why that should be selected as the scene for the drive. You know, Mr. Kieran?
Well, yes. There's a range of mountains to the westward and the eastward there, and that's the Burgundy Valley in which the famous grapes are grown, and that's a natural gateway going north or south through that.
Yes. Could you situate it for us exactly? Well, more or less exactly.
Why, it goes up through France it goes up through Dijon.
Well, near what other country is it?
Switzerland.
Near Switzerland.
Switzerland, yes.
That's quite right.
On the east side of France.
Yes, very, very far south. And fourth and last, Kattegat. 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 Mr. Kieran.
Well, the Kattegat is...
What is it, in the first place?
Kattegat is a cape or a promontory in between Skagerrak and Kattegat is the inside strait leading into the Baltic Sea.
It's a channel, yes, connecting the North and the Baltic Seas. And what is its specific importance in the present situation.
Well, in order to get from the Atlantic Ocean and the North Sea into the Baltic, you have to go up or down the Skagerrak on one side and the Kattegat on the other.
Yes, the British fleet would have to pass through that channel.
Right.
And is that going to be an easy thing to do?
I doubt it, said the carpenter.
Why should it not
be? Shed a bitter tear.
I bet. Why should it not be easy, Mr. Swain?
In the first place, it's very, very narrow, and it can be mined, and it can submarine stationed there, find battleships at their mercy.
Yes, it probably is thoroughly mined by this time, I should
say.
Well,
if it is, it's in violation of international law, because the waters there are so narrow, and Denmark is on one side, and Sweden on the other. I don't think
it is. You say it is in violation of international law?
I should think that if it were mined, all of it mined, it would be, yes.
Yes. Still, it may be mine.
Never mind.
4 out of 4 on that, gentlemen. The next question from Miss Ruth Waring of New Hartford, Iowa, transports us to a somewhat more cheerful field. What is the title of the motion picture in which an actor attracts attention? So far, it is not a non sequitur. In which an actor attracts attention by flipping a coin. Mr. Levant, easy for you?
Easy and old. It's Scarface, Georgie Raff.
Scarface with Georgie Raff, as you so intimately say. Thank you, that's quite right. What is the title of the motion picture in which an important appointment was made for the 102nd floor of the Empire State Building in New York? Mr. Levant again.
That's the last floor, I think. That was Charles Boyer smoking a cigarette again with Irene Dunne at the Empire. What's the name of that building on 34th Street?
I think you might mention it. It's not a plug. The Empire State.
The Empire State. Love Affair.
Love Affair. The picture Love Affair, yes. What motion picture shows us Donald Duck playing a rather important role, but not in an animated cartoon?
Give an imitation of Donald Duck. It'll come back to
you. I can't do it. Mr. Levant.
You remember...
Is it coming to you?
Yeah, that baby and Ginger Rogers. That's her mother.
That's the mother with Ginger Rogers.
That doll came from the department store with David Niven. He worked there on the cuff. His father really owned the place. And he gave her one. There was a big sequence about returning it.
You make it sound so real somehow, Mr. Levant.
My life.
I know. 3 out of 3. We're lucky to have you down here at all, I think.
Ask me about Europe, though. I like
all
that.
Right, we'll get to it.
How's Europe?
How is Europe, Mr. Levant? Mr. Adams wants to know.
John Gunther wrote that. Inside Europe.
Miss Lois Prentice of Chesterton, Indiana. Oh, here's a nice question. She has a question about tears. She wants you to answer the following questions about tears by quoting the familiar lines of poems or songs. First, when did Caesar cry? When did Caesar cry? This is not so easy.
When the Senate sat in tears.
Mr. Swing, I don't think that would be quite correct.
Nobody made him say uncle.
No. You remember in the play. I beg your pardon?
In the play of Julius Caesar.
In the play of Julius Caesar, but you have to answer by quoting a line of poetry. Well, it's when that the poor have cried, Caesar hath wept. You remember it's Antony in the defending him in his funeral oration. When that the poor have cried, Caesar hath wept. Which is considerable consolation for the poor. The next one, who cried at seeing how much sand there is on the seashore? One wrong, gentlemen. Mr. Kieran?
I think the walrus and the carpenter.
Yes.
They wept like anything to see such quantities of sand.
How does it go on?
The walrus and the carpenter were walking hand in hand.
I love to listen to you, Mr. Kieran. Go ahead.
They wept like anything to see such quantities of sand.
And how does it continue? Do you remember, Mr. Adams?
If this were cleared away, they said, by then it would be grand.
Very good. What poem tells of crying without a reason? What poem tells of crying without a reason? Unreasonable tears. Mr. Adams.
Tears, idle tears, I know not what they mean.
Very good, Mr. Adams. And it's from what poem?
One of Tennyson.
Do you know how the lines go on, Mr. Kieran?
Tears from the depths of some divine despair. Rise from the heart and gather to the eyes.
That's enough.
From the princess.
From the princess.
An interpolated song in the princess.
That's right. And what lady was told not to cry for me? What lady was told not to cry for me, Mr. Adams?
Susanna.
Can you give us the quotation?
Oh, Susanna, don't you cry for me.
How does it go on?
For I come from Alabama with my banjo on my
knee. That's right. Three out of four on that, and we were supposed to get only three out of four. Now the next question from Mr. Donald R. Murdoch of Detroit, Michigan. Question about natural history. I'm going to give you some distinguishing characteristics of well-known North American mammals. All you have to do is name the mammal. Now, the first is slow-moving and with adequate protection against foes. So far, it sounds like Haywood Broom. It climbs trees readily and eats bark or small twigs almost exclusively. No, that couldn't be Haywood Broom. No. So what mammal would that be? Mr. Kieran?
Sounds like a porcupine.
Porcupine is right. Now, if the mammal lived along streams and brooks and was an expert swimmer and diver and ate fish and meat and was highly prized by fur trappers, it would be, Mr. Kieran?
I'd call it an otter.
An otter, yes. Or a mink.
A mink could be.
Now, suppose the mammal depended on its long legs for escape from enemies. It's quiet, it's gentle, but it's a pest to gardeners. That would be what animal? Mr. Adams.
Might be a giraffe.
A pest is understatement, I think, in that case. It might be a giraffe, possibly, in an African garden, Mr. Kieran.
Well, depending on the size, it might be either a rabbit or a deer.
Is it a doe?
A rabbit or a hare. A doe? No, I don't think
so. Rabbit, hare, deer, anyone.
What's the matter with doe?
All right, we'll let doe in. All right, let doe in. It gives us doe, giraffe, and rabbit as a possible answer. That's three out of three. The end of this little session finds Canada Dry's losses totaling only $10. A very meager amount and a considerable accomplishment this evening on your part, gentlemen. May I compliment you? Now, Mr. Cross, will you take over briefly, and then I'll be back with a lineup for next week.
Sparkling Canada Dry water keeps drinks lively and more likable longer. From the first sip right down to the last, this fine club soda assures a uniform zesty tang that tastes better. Now, the reason for this isn't hard to find, but you can't duplicate it, for it's Canada Dry's carefully developed and scientific process, pinpoint carbonation, that means millions of smaller bubbles, better taste, and longer life. Tests have proven that an open bottle of Canada Dry water has plenty of sparkling goodness even 24 hours later. That's why leading hotels, restaurants, and clubs throughout the world serve this fine club soda, and one of the outstanding reasons why more people every day order by name sparkling Canada Dry water.
Mr. Swing, will you please accept Canada Dry's thanks for coming down this evening? Now, next week, Mr. Adams and Mr. Kieran will be on tap, and our guests of honor will be two. Bernard Jaffe, author of Outposts of Science, and Alice Marble, who, of course, is the national women's singles tennis champion, who is known as a singer, and who, in her spare time, I understand, designs tennis shorts. Now, to our listeners, we say, please send your questions along. If you have a stumper to stump our board of experts, let's have it. There are $5 in it for you if we use the question, and another $10 if we answer it incorrectly. That might be 15 in all. Send your letters with questions and the correct answers to Information, Please, 1 Pershing Square, New York City.
Now, these warm summer days always keep a supply of Canada Dry ginger ale, sparkling water, lime Ricky, and Tom Collins mixer on hand.